Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is endings and beginnings, and it is, as many of you will know, our topic because this is the end, my friend. This is my last live show on Hay House Radio. Hopefully it is not the end of me on Hay House Radio. They've said they're going to invite me back to appear on other things, and I would love that. But a lot of people have shared with me both absolutely lovely, thank you, grateful, appreciative memories and things from the show. And some people are just really mad at me. And I kind of get it, in the sense that, you know, for a lot of people, having sort of a regular touchstone in your life, something that you can kind of set your clock to and know that, hey, for this hour, I'm going to be okay. For this hour, I'm going to be taken care of. For this hour, there is someone here who gets it, or who can help, or from whom I find hope. And that is a beautiful thing to have for yourself, but that isn't actually about me. That is about recognizing that it's really nice to build in touchstones into your world. It's really nice to give yourself space to get quiet, to get reflective, to switch your mind off, to stop trying to learn and achieve, and to just be with life as it is. And essentially, if we went back over pretty much every conversation, and I must have had a few thousand conversations with you guys over the last 14 years, inevitably, you know, besides the, you know, where I do my best to kind of gently chide people around the thinking that they have that looks real to them, almost everything else I've said is, hey, listen to yourself. Tune in to you. Allow a kind of self-intimacy to grow in you. And it will take care of you more than any radio show can, more than any radio show host can. Now, I'd also like to point out, I'm not planning on dying at the end of the show. You can still find me at michaelneal.org. You can still listen to hundreds of podcasts, the Caffeine for the Soul podcast, which I'm creating new ones on an ongoing basis. You can still come and see me live. We're going to be with Anita Morjani in Los Angeles this weekend. And you can find that on the site at michaelneal.org. It's a course called Finding Freedom. You can find me in Hay House. The archives are going to be there for you, and they're going to keep playing the show for a while live, you know, the replays as well. And so, you know, nothing's really over, but there is an ending. And for me, I really wanted to kind of use our last hour together to kind of look back. And I'm hoping this won't be self-indulgent. I'm hoping you will find this enjoyable. And I wanted to begin with what I think, we were going back through the archives, is the very first 2.5 minutes of me on Hay House Radio from November of 2000, no, not 2000, yeah, November 2006, 7, 5, 5, November 2005. So Rocky, you want to go ahead and play that first clip for us?
1, 2, 3, hit it.
You'll recognize the theme music from
Welcome
the podcast
to,
now.
You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go and do that. Because what the world needs is people who've come alive. And so I would love to hear from you, love to hear more about what makes you come alive. And also, I'd love to hear from you if you have no idea. If you're sitting there right now and you're going, come alive, alive, vague memories of feeling alive, I'm not really sure. If you're wondering what it would be that makes you come alive, Phone me and we'll talk about that. The numbers to call are 1-866-903-TALK. That's 1-866-903-8255. Or from outside the United States, 001-858-623-0102. You know, one of the things I talk about a lot in the work that I do is why it is that people don't go for wow in their own lives. Because if you think about it, if you look at a list of your goals, if you even have a list of goals right now, how many things on that list are what you would call practical? How many things on that list are what you might call a logical next step? How many things on that list are good ideas, very reasonable plans? Anything on that list that would make your parents really happy, but you're not so sure about, or would make your partner really happy, or your kids really happy, but it's not really yours yet? See, I've got this theory. There's a big thing in goal setting called SMART goals, S-M-A-R-T. And a SMART goal is meant to be a goal that's specific, and it's measurable, and it's action-oriented, and it's realistic, and it's time-bound. But in my experience, SMART goals, they're not always so smart, in the sense that the number one reason that people don't already have what they want is they've learned not to let themselves want what they don't think that they can have. In other words, most people that I speak to suffer from what I call premature practicality. They start trying to set goals around what they think they can actually get instead of what they really want. And the interesting rule that I've learned, I call it the golden rule of goal setting, is that it's easier to get what you really want than what you think you can have.
So that was how it all began. It was really weird. I didn't even remember that somebody else's voice, I think it might have been Summer McStravick, you used to come on and introduce me. And I was thinking about it the other day. Where did the good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be, come from? And the good morning, good afternoon, good evening, I know a lot of people now say that. I don't know that I was the first, but it just occurred to me that I had no idea what time zone people would be listening in. And some of you may or may not know, the wherever you may be was a tribute to the longtime Dodgers baseball announcer, Vin Scully, who began every broadcast for 50-plus years with, "Welcome, Dodgers fans, wherever you may be." And I always kind of loved that, and that's where that came from. The other thing that I think is really funny is I sound 12. I was not 12. But what's interesting, and this is something you may or may not know, I think I've talked about it on the show before, when I started this show 15 years ago, 14 years ago, I honestly thought I had 12 weeks in me. So Reed had asked me to, I'd been doing a radio show on another network, and Reed had asked me to come in and be one of the original team for Hay House Radio. And I was like, yeah, I could do that. I reckon I could do a show for about 3 months, because I figured I had about 3 months worth of stuff to say, and I didn't want to do a show if I didn't have anything to say. And what I would do is I would script. So listening back to that, I sound fairly like I'm just talking off the cuff, but I can pretty much guarantee you I had a script in front of me that I had written out and printed up. And often in those early months, I would have 4, 5, sometimes 6 pages worth of script to use as intro and fill. And I would sort of improvise around the script, but it was all like, okay, I cannot afford dead air. I need to know what's going to happen until people call. And then I kind of knew once people call, all bets are off. See, that's my favorite thing. I used to say, if I could choose any training style to do in the world, the training would begin with me getting up in front of the group and going, any questions? And then we would just take it from there. And I do, in fact, have groups like IPIP, we call it Infinite Potential, Infinite Possibilities, where that is essentially the format for 3 days. People just come in and we talk about whatever they want to talk about, and all sorts of cool stuff happens. But here's what happened. In the 12 weeks, I kind of fell in love with the show. I fell in love with the interaction with you guys. I fell in love with you, with, you know, people who just really wanted to get more out of themselves, get more out of their lives. And so I thought, oh, I better learn some new stuff so I can stay on the air for more than 12 weeks. So for the next chunk of time, what I did was I went out and I'd study things, and I'd just grab books and go try and get inspired for a topic for the next show and the next show, so I could keep going. So I was like running. Somebody was describing something else when I first heard this, but I love the description. You could say that my strategy was I could hear the train coming, and so I would run out ahead of the train laying track so that it wouldn't derail by the time it got to me. And it was exhausting in some ways. And, you know, I'd catch my breath, you know, I'd take a week off, and then suddenly it would be like, oh, God, I hear the train coming, and I'd run and learn something new that I could share on the show that week. Well, eventually what happened, and I can't remember how quickly it happened, but it happened pretty quickly. I forgot to do the script. I ran out of time. Actually, it wasn't that I forgot, but I forgot until it was too late. I can't even remember. It may have been something as silly as my printer wasn't working. And so I suddenly am going on air and I got nothing. And to my surprise, my head didn't explode. They weren't left with dead air. I didn't stand up and put on a song. It would have been interesting probably if I had. Things started to come. Ideas started to come through me, and I recognized, oh, well, that's what happens when I teach. That's what happens when I'm with another human being in a coaching session. Well, of course that would be what happens when I'm on air with you, because we're made that way. We are made of the creative flow. We are made as conduits for the creative flow. We've moved house recently, and I have a fountain with the three graces. Not Kelly Jones, and I don't know who the third grace would be, but the three graces of Greek myth, the muses. And it was like the muses show up when you make space for them. When I stopped over planning, something brand new could show up that surprised me. And that became the basis for the show from that time forward. And then it became super fun because there was no stress in it. It's like, well, aren't you worried? No. Well, what if nothing shows up? Well, then I guess nothing will show up. But I've never yet had an experience where nothing showed up. Sometimes later I thought it was better or worse. And somehow for the next 14, 15 years, every time we've gotten on air, something has shown up. Either words through me or callers from you. And I want to share a couple of my all-time favorite callers. And I was thinking of a few before choosing the two that I chose. And the first was a woman who was a professional bowler. Or actually, she wasn't a professional bowler, but she wanted to become one. And it was like right at the end of the show. So I normally don't take a call too close to the end of the show, but I just was fascinated that she wants to be a professional bowler. I don't come across that often in my world. And she came in, and we talked about it, and I said, well, what would you do? Because the show was called The Secret of Letting Go for It. And it was about how we think it's either all on us or none of it is on us. Either it's just going to magically be attracted to us, or we've got to do, do, do. And there's this interesting kind of butterfly point where you have let go and you're going for it. You know, Buddhism might call it non-attachment, but it's just a kind of a sweet spot that you can get a feel for over time. And so I said to her, well, what would you do if, you know, and her family wasn't completely on board with this. And I said, well, what would you do if they were on board? And she said, well, I'd sign up for the tournament that's happening in my hometown in 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, well, do you think it would, do you do well? She said, yeah, I think I would win it. And then I'd qualify for the tour. And I said, well, why wouldn't you sign up? And she said, well, I've been trying to let go and let God. And I don't know if I told that particular story on that day, but many of you will know, and I'm going to do it anyways. This is what I would say to her right now. The story of the man who, there's a flood in his town, and the police come by and go, hey, Bob, we're evacuating, you know, get in. We'll take you safely out of here. And he goes, no, I'm going to let go. I'm going to allow. I'm going to let the universe provide. I'm going to let God take care of me. And they went, all right. And they drive off, and, you know, sure enough, the floodwaters start to rise, and he's now on the second floor of the house, and the water's kind of below him. And this is the same police come by in a boat and go, hey, Bob, you know, come on, we got you. Just hop in the boat. We'll take you out of here. And he's like, no, I'm letting go. I'm allowing. I'm opening up. Do nothing, Sid Banks said. I'm going to let the universe provide. I'm going to let God take care of me. Well, a few hours later, he is on clinging to the roof, the chimney on the roof of his home, like the highest point. And, you know, he's beginning to panic a little bit, but no, he has faith. And a helicopter flies by and they drop down a rope ladder, and the megaphone, guy comes out and goes, Bob, climb aboard. We got to get you out of here. And he's like, nope, I'm letting go. I'm trusting the universe. I'm going to allow God to take care of me. And he drowns and dies. But he goes to heaven and he gets to sit down with God or the universe or whatever. And he's a little bit pissed off. He's a little bit upset. And he's like, hey, I had faith. I allowed. I accepted. I was in a loving state. I did everything right. Why did you let me die? To which God, the universe, says, what do you want, Bob? I sent you a car, a boat, and a helicopter. At some point, you got to climb aboard. Now, that was one where we had a lot of fun on the call. I remember the other example that I gave her was, you know, how well would it work if you let go of the bowling ball before you got to the line? And she said, well, it would just fall on my foot. And I was like, right, yeah, it takes a certain amount of action, of directional action, before you let go of the ball. And then the universe can do its thing. But you got to get in the game first. So that was one that I considered because I really liked that one. There was another one I considered where, I don't know, some of you have been around long enough to remember all of these, but for some reason there was somebody, and she lived in a small town, and I'm going to say it was in, you know, let's call it Expo, Colorado. And she was calling from a bus station in Expo, Colorado. And I said, so coming up next is Cynthia. She's calling us from a bus station between 4th and Main in Expo, Colorado. You know, what can I do for you today? And there's a pause, and she says, I'm in witness protection, and I'm hiding out. And I'm like, oh, my God, I just gave out her. And it turned out it was even her real name. You know, I've just given out her real name and exact location, on air. And I don't remember how we recovered from that, but we got through that. But anyways, I didn't choose that one. I chose two. And the first one is a little clip. It's not a little clip. It's actually quite a long clip, but I think you're going to find it's really enjoyable. And then I'll tell you a little bit story of what happened next. And it's a clip that I like to call French Kissing God. So, Rocky, can we go ahead with that?
Let's go out to Austin, Texas, and let's speak with Amanda. Amanda, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I have to say I'm very nervous to talk to you.
I'm a terrifying man.
You've helped me so much. I have relapsed in my eating disorder, and I wanted to get some help with your, I wanted to get your thoughts on, there's something I'm not seeing with the connection of the outside, and I know you just talked to Laura about this, and it was wonderful. If something makes me happy in my life, in a circumstance or something, I feel happy, and then I feel, well, it's not the circumstance, it's just my thinking. So it doesn't matter what happens out there because it's just my thinking. And it's easier if something bad happens and I feel bad, I can recognize it's just my thinking I'm feeling. Don't worry about the outside world. Does that make any sense?
It does, yeah. Yeah, I mean, go ahead, though.
I have so much I want to ask you, but I'm narrowing it down. I listened to one of your talks at the end of stress, where you told a story about the dragon, the fire-breathing dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me such insight, and I was able to really conquer my behaviors, and it was just like a light switch went off, and I was wonderful. And then I relapsed again. And so I find myself looking again for that insight that changed everything.
So Amanda, can I, rather than have you go on, can I speak to what I've already heard?
Please do. Please
Okay. And then for everyone else listening, I'm going to tell the dragon story after I'm done with Amanda, just because if they haven't heard it, we'll share the dragon story. But so the first thing I want to say is, you know, I'm sorry that you're suffering. And I mean that, like I want to say that because everything else that I say may sound like, yeah, you're suffering. I don't mean that. I genuinely, it sucks to be in it. And when I'm in it, I'm no good to anyone. So I do want to say that up front.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to take two things that you said and speak to those. So one thing you talked about was, well, I know it's, you know, my thinking, so it doesn't really matter what happens, and it's easier to kind of see, it's nicer to kind of go, oh, I don't have to suffer because that bad thing happened, but it sounds like you think that you're not supposed to feel good because that good thing happened.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's part one. We're going to talk to that. And then the other thing I want to speak to is this idea of relapse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so can we speak to relapse first?
Please.
Yeah, does relapse make you feel as miserable as it makes me feel?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I.
Yeah. So here's why I don't find that a very useful way of describing engaging in a behavior that I recognize may be unsustainable long term for the well-being of my physical organism.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. It's not, we do what we do. This is my understanding that I'm sharing. Okay. We do what we do, whether it is, shopping, gambling, you know, having sex with strangers, biting our fingernails, scratching our arms, watching too much TV, taking heroin, beating people up. We actually do it to get out of pain. It's our best attempt at getting back to okay. So whether it's more socially acceptable or personally acceptable to me, what my coping behavior is that I do to try, just out of habit, do to try to get back to okay, or whether it's completely unacceptable, it's really, they're all of a muchness, you know, whether you know, whether somebody cuts or they pull out their hair or they pluck their eyebrows or they, you know, fill their house with crap from the Home Shopping Network. I'm sure there's some lovely things on the Home Shopping Network, but I'm just talking about the crap, right? You know, it's all the same thing. It is an attempt through manipulating my brain chemistry. Uh-huh. Often by manipulating the outside world, but sometimes directly through drugs and sex and things like that, to get back to a place of peace and equilibrium inside myself.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Or for sometimes some people describe it as getting back to a feeling of aliveness instead of numbness.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So honestly, unless you're kicking puppies or killing babies, which for me are the two that I'm really against. I think to try and make yourself give up a behavior that is right now in those moments, your best way you found of coping is kind of mean.
It's such a relief to hear.
Because, so here's the next bit of that. Because those behaviors ultimately are self-harming, in other words, long-term, it really doesn't do a body good to shoot up too much heroin, in my experience. And I'm saying that facetiously, but I know a number of people who have killed themselves or almost killed themselves that way. So I'm not being as facetious as I sound.
Yeah.
It is really useful to see if we can get at what's the source of that discomfort that's so intense that we feel like we need to do something that extreme to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the source of that well-being that we think we need to engage in something so intense to get back to? And, you know, I sometimes describe it as when you stop taking the poison, you stop needing the antidote.
Yeah.
Well, we don't take the poison on purpose. We just don't understand what it is that's poisoning us.
Exactly.
And what's poisoning anybody? That came out funny, but it's like anybody. I'm just trying to underline it with my voice, right? Is thought believed?
Mm-hmm.
It's thinking that becomes so all-consuming that we literally cannot feel the electricity coming through the wire. We can no longer feel the life force coming through our blade of grass. We can't feel the ocean behind our drop of water. And we feel cut off, and we feel separate, and we feel lost, and we feel alone. And we are willing to do anything, no matter how harmful we might in a calmer, quieter moment know it might be, in order to get back to that feeling. I remember, go ahead, sorry.
Sorry, no, you're just hitting the nail on the head. It's beautiful.
So I remember reading, and I think it was John Belushi, who died of a heroin overdose. I remember him describing heroin once as like French kissing God. Now, it would be understandable if that was like the only way to get a French kiss from God, like that you might want to do that, right? Well, turns out, you know, oh, I'm going to go to hell, aren't I? Turns out God's a bit of a slut. And what I mean by that is like God will French kiss anybody. You just have to ask, right? I mean, it's just, it really is there for the taking. The joy of life is in the living. It's in us. It's just our nature. We don't have to earn it. We just have to not hide from it anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think I'm going to stop on that part of the conversation. Just because I'm getting self-conscious now, thinking, I hope my wife's not listening to the show. I'm in for it. Right. And let me speak to the other thing, this idea that, okay, I know that my bad feelings aren't to do with the bad things that... It's very easy and normal to hear something with the ring of truth and think it's a good idea that you're supposed to do something about. So it's very easy for people to hear, oh, I'm living in the feeling of my thinking, so I should just tell myself that it's just my thinking and then I won't feel so bad.
That's exactly what I do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not my first rodeo, Amanda. See the little Austin, Texas thing I just did there?
Right. Yeah.
Now, what the only value, as far as I'm concerned, about listening to somebody like me go on and on and on and on about the same thing week in and week out, is that at some point, somebody takes a look for themselves and they actually see the truth of it. They get an insight, a sight from within. They see with a capital S. They hear with a capital H. And they know, let's give it a capital K, that it's true.
Yeah.
Now, if it's true, it's just true and you don't have to think about it. And you don't have to remind yourself of it. You don't have to tell yourself that.
Yeah.
Until you know that it's true, it doesn't really help to try and convince yourself of it.
Yeah. So, what do I do? I don't know. I want to know it to be true.
Yeah. Well, but here's what's even better than wanting that is how about wanting to see for yourself whether or not it's true. Mm-hmm. Now, I can say that it's true because I see it. You can hear me say that and go, wow, he sounds really certain. I want some of that. Uh-huh. But actually, you're better off seeing the truth for yourself, even if it would mean that I'm full of crap, if it turns out that I'm wrong.
Uh-huh.
And if you look for the truth of it, if you look to see, you will start to see every single human being around you living in a thought-created reality.
Mm-hmm.
sometimes a heaven, sometimes a hell, but a separate reality made entirely of thought. And then when you see that around you, you start to see it in yourself. If you look, I don't have a better direction to give you than within, which is really tricky because that like sounds like in, so where, like behind my rib cage, to the left or right of my heart, right? No, I don't know. But if you close your eyes, like not out there.
Not in my thoughts.
And not in your thoughts. And see if you can feel, intuit, sense, glimpse the space inside of which thoughts arise. That's the universal mind. That's universal consciousness. That's universal thought. That's the truth of who we are. We are the unconditioned mind. But one of the properties of the unconditioned mind is that it's continually being conditioned by thought.
Exactly, yes.
So if you want to, here's your homework.
Okay.
You know, stop trying to get yourself to do what you can't yet do and go French kiss God.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amanda. Really nice to talk.
So it's been a while since I've actually listened to that, and it makes me smile. And part of what makes me smile about that is that about a year or two later, a woman came up to me, a very beautiful, very tattooed woman, and said, "Hey, I don't know if you remember me, but I called into your radio show and I had a relapse and I got to meet Amanda, and she is amazing." And she is amazing to the point where she wrote a beautiful book about freedom from eating disorders and depression, and it's called Uncovering. So if you're interested in what became of Amanda post that call, I really recommend going online and ordering a copy of Uncovering, A New Understanding Behind Radical Freedom from Eating Disorders and Depression by Amanda Jones. And so many of you know the dragon story, but I'm going to share the dragon story, and then I'm going to share one last call that is probably the call I will remember most from my 15 years on the show. So imagine that you live in a world where there are scary dragons everywhere you look. Not like Disney dragons, but Game of Thrones dragons, like nasty, mean, vicious, violent, terrifying dragons. Now, if you lived in a world filled with dragons, it would make sense that in order to stay safe, you would build castles, or you would try to align yourself with castles. And in fact, in this imaginary world, people build castles out of money. And the idea is, if I have enough money, then the dragons won't be able to penetrate my castle. Or they might say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to build a castle out of love. If I can find one person who loves me enough, then that will keep me safe from the dragons. Or they might try and do it out of worthiness, right? If I can just be worthy enough, if I can just do everything right, then the dragons won't get me. Or they might try to do it out of fame. If I can get enough people to love me a little, then the dragons won't. And so on, and so on, and so on. And the problem, of course, is that most people aren't that great at castle building. So a lot of people wind up being scratched by dragons. And they can tell that they've been scratched because they can feel the poison inside them. And it feels horrible and it feels uncomfortable. And they try to find a way to cope with the stress and the fear and the poison running through their veins. And so they do things. They do things like binge eat and then throw up, or try and exert some control over their lives by not eating at all, or they have sex inappropriately, or they take drugs inappropriately, or they drink inappropriately. And it helps a little for a while, but it also kind of kills them slowly. Now, Imagine one day, after a lifetime of living in this world, you woke up and you realized beyond a shadow of a doubt that there are no dragons. That what appeared to be dragons were really just shadows, reflections of other things that looked like dragons. And because we kind of expect to see dragons, we thought it was the dragons coming. And that what people thought were dragon scratches and dragon bites were really just the kind of ever-changing moods and feelings that every human being goes through, because we're alive and we're creative and our minds are always on and we feel thought. Well, if you woke up one day from that world, you would suddenly see everybody around you running around building bigger and bigger castles and trying to cope with the pain of the dragon bites. And you would start to still see the shadows, and occasionally you might even flinch when you saw the what looked like the shadow of a dragon. But then you'd see, oh, that's just the shadow of thought. That isn't real. That can't do anything to me. Now, what would you do? Well, you might continue to build some of your castles, because castle building can be kind of fun when you don't have to do it. It can be really fun to go out and make a lot of money and fall in love and get famous and do all sorts of things if you don't need to. And you probably wouldn't be inclined to overdrink, overeat, over this, over that, because you wouldn't feel like you were suffering from something permanent. So you wouldn't feel like you needed long-lasting permanent solutions to temporary thought-created problems. And you would probably look around at everybody else running around terrified of the dragons, and you'd want to help in some way. And you'd probably come to see that you can do what you do, but as long as it really looks to somebody like they're in danger of being eaten or scratched or attacked by a dragon, they're going to keep doing whatever it is they've learned to do to keep themselves safe and to keep themselves okay. And if you want, you can find at michaelneal.org or on YouTube, you can find a sort of an animated version of the dragon story. And you might enjoy that. This next call, the last one I'm going to share, is a call that took me completely by surprise. One of the things about the show that I like is I never know who's going to call. Sometimes there are 20 people on hold and I never get to any of them. Sometimes there are like two people that day and I bring them both on. But this particular day, a young boy came on the call, and I'll just ask him to play that call, and then we'll talk about it. Rocky, can you put on the third clip? Adrian, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hi, Mr. Michael Neal. It's a really honor to talk to you. I'm a fan of all your books.
Oh, thank you. Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 13 years old.
That is very cool. So
thank
what?
You.
Yeah.
So it's not less of a question. It's more of like how to handle this situation.
Yeah.
So I have a 19-year-old brother who is like has a huge problem. For example, like he's like caught up in a thought all the time, but he's sometimes like very violent. For example. And he hits a lot of us. Like, he even sometimes hits my mom, even sometimes hits my dad, hits me a lot. And my dad always calls the police, but me and my mom, for some reason, always cover it because we are afraid. Like, there's so many things of going to police, like putting money to bail him out, going to court. And so my mom is basically going to have to handle it all herself because my dad has a Parkinson's disease and, you know, it's hard to handle all this stuff. But, and he gets you into these situations where I don't know what to do and I get really crazy. And, like, I'm sometimes having suicidal thoughts because of him. But, like, I'm really, like, loving life, but he gets me into these situations where I don't know what to do, and I don't know how to get myself out of it. And like,
okay, hang on a sec, Adrian. Let me just check in with you before you keep going. Okay.
Okay, no problem.
So first off, wow. I know that doesn't help, but I have to say it. That's both a really a really difficult situation that you're in, and I'm kind of blown away by the fact that you're able to be as articulate about it as you are. So I just want to acknowledge you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So here's the bit. Like, there's all sorts of things that I would love to be able to kind of say, well, what you need to do is blah, 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 blah. And honestly, there isn't one answer to a situation like this. And it's something that, you know, it's not really on you to find the right answer, but I can tell you some things that I think you might find helpful. Would that be okay?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. So when your brother acts the way that he acts, right, you get scared, right?
Yeah.
Right. That's pretty normal. I think I would too. Now, what do you think it means when you're scared?
When you're scared, it's like sometimes your brain acts a way that it's like your brain kind of freezes and you don't know what to do, kind of. It's like in a place of terror, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we get scared, it's like all our thoughts are coming all at once, and it's all like a jumble. And so that bit of the brain just kind of gives up for a bit. And we just react. They call it, fright or flight, right? You freeze or flight. You either kind of run away or just become like a rabbit, right? Do you know that feeling?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now here's what's underneath that. See, when fear comes in, there's two kinds of fear. There's the fear which is kind of built into our bodies to keep us safe. And that fear you can trust. Like in the moment, if there's danger, that fear will actually do everything that it can to keep you safe, whatever that is. So in the moment, there's no problem with fear, right? It's not something you've got to master or overcome or fight against. It's there for you. But when you're feeling fear and your brother's not there and he's not being violent, does that ever happen?
Yeah, he's just there and he's just talking. Like,
yeah.
He has gotten to a point where, like, we're just talking about basketball, and I'm just afraid if I say one wrong thing, it could get into, like, a whole situation that I'm going to regret.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's, I understand that. And again, there's a kind of a common sense to that, because sometimes it happens, right? You say one thing and he's off, right? Now, do you get that it isn't what you say that sets him off? It's what he thinks?
Yeah, that's true. I get that now, yeah.
So it's this really interesting thing where it really looks like we can make other people happy or sad. We can make them, it's really my fault that he behaves that way. And actually, it could be something random like a sound outside that does the same thing. So what that means is you don't have to take responsibility for what's going on inside your brother's head. Like, all you've got is now it sounds to me like you care about your family.
I really do, yes.
Yeah, no, I hear that. So what you've got on your side, right, is you've got your care for your family. You've got an understanding that I got to tell you is way beyond your years of what's really going on, what the dynamic really is. It's not between you guys and him. It's between him and him. And unfortunately, you guys get caught in the crossfire sometimes. But it also, there's a, there's a resilience inside you, right? There is a, and I wish I had a better word than wisdom because it sounds so grand. There's something inside you that in your quieter moments when you're not scared, if you listen to that inner voice, it will guide you and something new will occur to you. Now, I can't tell you, you'll have one idea and that will make everything okay forever. But do you know how you already kind of instinctively know, don't go this way, go that way?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that can guide you even beyond when you're with your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And do you, and this is a funny question to ask, and there's not a right answer to it. But at some level, do you know that you're going to be okay no matter what happens with your brother?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes, no.
Yeah. Well, when that sometimes, yeah, that you do know, that's your wisdom. That's that part of you that we all have in us that does know, that kind of just has we can sniff the truth. And when sometimes no, that's when your thoughts start going crazy, like your brother's thoughts do. Now, for him, when his thoughts go crazy and he doesn't know how to deal with it, he gets violent. When your thoughts go crazy and you don't know how to deal with it, you get sad and you get suicidal and you start thinking about kind of taking yourself out of the game. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah.
Yeah. So really, the thing that you can learn, and it's not like learn like in school, but the thing that you can start to see more and more is all that's ever going on when you're really upset is your thoughts are spinning out of control, right? It's like being on a ride that starts, it's fun when it's spinning. It's not that fun when it spins slow, and then it's fun when it spins fast, but then it gets to the point where it spins so fast, you think you're going to get sick.
Yeah.
That's our thinking, right? And that happens to all of us sometimes. But if you know that all that's happening is, oh, my thoughts are spinning really out of control. Boy, I can't wait till they slow back down. Because they always do, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you don't have to do anything about it. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to act on it. You don't have to stop it. Just know, you know, what goes up always comes down, right? What spins fast, when it stops, always will slow down, right? Do you ever play, we used to call them whizzers, but do you ever play with like tops or spinny things?
Yeah.
Right? You know how no matter how hard you spin them, no matter how fast you spin them, they always come back to
falling down.
Yeah. Well, our thinking's the same way. When we stop spinning it, and I'm not saying we're doing it on purpose, it'll always come back to that quiet place inside you. Okay? And that's where you'll find your strength. And that's where you'll find your wisdom. And that's the place from which you're going to best take care of yourself and take care of your family.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can you do me a favor, Adrian? Can you stay on the line? And we're going to get, if you give the guy in studio, or it might be Rachel, actually, I'm not sure who's there. If you give him your details, and I'd love to, I'd love to send you a few things, if that would be okay.
Okay.
All right. So you're welcome, Adrian. Hang on the line. So, Holy Mother of God, there's a way to start the show today.
So, again, I haven't listened to that in a number of years, and yeah, Holy Mother of God, indeed. I did, Adrian did leave his details. We were able to have a chat with his mom, and through our really lovely network of coaches and principles-based practitioners, we're able to get somebody who talked with his mom, who talked with him, who talked with his brother. And the next time, he did actually call one time back into the show, but also through my friends, I know that their family dynamic really changed for the better. And yeah, what an amazing kid. And it kind of just points to the unbelievable possibility in all of us. that there are no circumstances in which that which is right with us can't conquer that which feels wrong with us. And that, in many ways, is the value of these conversations. And look, we've been having these conversations via the radio show each week, but I have these conversations in videos. I have these conversations in live events. I have these conversations pretty much every chance I get, because it reminds me too that when things look bleak, when things look hopeless, when it really looks like the outside is the cause of my pain, my suffering, my hopelessness, I'm just wrong. And you know, there's this idea, human beings hate to be wrong. Honestly, if my inner world is anything to go by, I love being wrong. One of my favorite wrongnesses was I was absolutely sure that having a child was the end of my life. When my wife got pregnant, and I conceded that maybe by the age of 30, we could have a baby. But darn it, she got pregnant long before that. And I knew it wasn't my place to, you know, say, hey, we're not going to go ahead with this. But by the same token, I also knew, and I'm using air quotes here, always good on the radio, I knew that my life was over and that it was going to be misery and pain from that moment forward. And the thing that got me through the next 9 months was that I also knew that I'm usually wrong. Like, realizing that you're a bit of an idiot is really helpful. You know, realizing that you're not one of the world's great psychics. And by the way, I've had this conversation with the world's great psychics, and they feel much the same way when it comes to their own lives. It's a blessing, because you start to realize, hey, I'm making up the future. And I'm making it up without being able to predict what will occur along the way, what will change along the way, not just in the world, but in my own thinking. What new thought will occur to me that will maybe not give me a way out of the very real mess I think I'm in, but will show me that the very real mess I think I'm in really isn't that real and is nowhere near as messy as I thought. And every time we wake up to that, every time we see that at a deeper level, we get to experience a little bit more freedom and a little bit more lightness and a little bit more love. And if you've enjoyed this show, I encourage you, I mean, obviously stick around, listen to the archives on Hay House in our inner circle at michaelneal.org. But just stay in the conversation in whatever way you know how. And we're continually finding new ways to make this conversation available to anyone at every level of income and at every life situation. I want to sneak in a few thank yous. And I hate doing this because I'm going to forget people. And if I forget you, I didn't forget you. I just couldn't think of you right now. So big thanks to Reed Tracy, who originally asked me to do the show. Margaret Nielsen, who's been sort of a lifeline and support. Rachel and Sharon and Diane Ray and Summer McStravick and you know that thing at the end of The Wizard of Oz where she says, you know, to the scarecrow, I think I shall miss you most of all. Well, my very own Hay House scarecrows are Steve and Rocky. You guys have been great to me. You've been great to hang out with. You have put up with me showing up with 12 seconds before we go live on air. And I think I only had to bribe you with like 2 bottles of vodka each over the last 14 years. So deep appreciation to everyone in the Hay House family, but particularly everyone in the Hay House radio family. And that includes you. My big thanks to you, because had you not kept showing up, I would have left years ago. So I think there's nothing left for it but to say one last time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.